it'll be first and 25.
This is First and 25, the Football Zebras podcast, our weekly roundtable discussion on all the things that we see in officiating. I'm joined with members of the Football Zebras crew, Cam Philippe, Chris Soibert, Pat Weber, and I'm Ben O. So I have a few topics on deck this week, and we'll take a look first of all on Sunday night. We had a little trick play for a touchdown, where Lions quarterback Jared Goff flies out from under center, and then we have a direct snap to the running back, who then throws the ball to Jared Goff for the apparent touchdown. Long conference, and in the interim, we had Terry McCauley, the rules analyst, pop in and saying that this was not going to be a legal play. After the conference, flag comes out and it is for illegal motion. So again, it happens to the Lions, but I think I'll go right to you, Pat, because again, we have a situation where we have a trick play that was not executed properly.
Yeah, we have talked about it a few times in the past. One of the biggest tenets on trick plays is trick plays need to be executed flawlessly with respect to the rules. There is no benefit of the doubt given when you're trying to push the bounds on purpose and be tricky. We've also talked about the coaches clearing trick plays with the refs in the pregame. And I think this is one especially where if they had a good conversation with the officiating crew, with what they wanted to do, the officials would have made it very clear to the Lions that if Jared Goff was within a yard of the center and by rule T formation quarterback, that he needed to be not in that area and paused before he went in motion.
And I'll let you chime in, Cam, with a little bit about the play there and what you saw. And of course, the rule is not really as obscure. It doesn't come up very often, but it's right there, plain as day, in the illegal motion section of the rule book.
Yeah, so again, illegal motion, just as a foul in general, is not something we see generally often. It probably happens about 5 to 10 times a season. But in this specific circumstance, you know, it's governed by Rule 7, Section 4, which is action at or before the snap. And just like Pat said, it refers to T formation quarterbacks. And if they're under center, they can go in motion as long as it's not quick and abrupt. And if that's the case, it's a false start. But that quarterback has to come to a complete stop for a full second before the snap, similar to how illegal shifts are governed. But it's specifically defined here as a type of illegal motion. And it's exactly what we had here. We've gone over before how trick plays need to be, they have to have all your T's crossed and I's dotted. But on this one here, you know, it's something you don't see very often. So it's magnified when it takes away a touchdown. I don't know when the last time this happened was, but the last time I remember seeing it was 7 years ago with a play in Cleveland. Baker Mayfield was called for this on a trick play very, very early in the game. It may have happened since, but that's the last time I remember it happening. So it's not a common thing. So again, it happens on Sunday Night Football. It results in a touchdown. So getting it taken off, even though the explanation came a little bit after the fact, we've also talked about how there's no such thing as a late flag. So getting in and getting together and discussing this and making sure everything was handled properly is obviously the best way to go, because it's better to take your time and break it all down and get multiple opinions rather than make a decision hastily that could potentially be the incorrect one.
And Chris, well, being the Michigander here, it's Detroit again. And we ran into this situation at the end of the 2023 regular season with a little bit of subterfuge. And yeah, there was some blame to be put on the officials and, you know, whatever the percentage depends on which city you live in. But we were basically looking at a situation there where they were trying to game the system.
Yeah, I mean, a Dan Campbell coaching call card has been to push the limits and find ways to score touchdowns when their offense may not be clicking, right? And this was earlier in the game, right? So they wanted to make a statement. But it was interesting because the pool reporter talked to referee Craig Rolstead after the game. And usually those are pretty useless, but this time it was actually very interesting because Craig went into great detail going over why there was not an initial flag. And it almost seemed like it was what happens during an intentional grounding call, right? Where different crew members have different pieces of information. So Rolstead said, you know, I had the quarterback there in the T formation initially. So that in his mind confirmed that part of the call. He went in motion, but at that point, he was almost handing that Jared Goff off to one of the line of scrimmage officials to determine if he would stop for 1 second before the snap. So that's why they came together and dropped the flag late. Again, very similar to an intentional grounding. And again, everyone said it was the right call after the fact. You know, even Tony Dungy, I saw comment on watching their practice and seeing them practice on this. And he was thinking to himself, well, that's going to be flagged for a legal motion because that's as legal as far as I remember. He said maybe rules have changed since he coached. But again, had going back to Pat's point, you clear it with the officials before the game so this never happens. And clearly the Lions did not do that.
And mechanically, we were trying to figure out what was the delay. And then even on the first read of the pool report, Craig Rolstead was saying that lost track. I figured, okay, maybe the back got in the way and he wasn't able because the key for the referee is the quarterback. But now, of course, not even thinking until reading it over a second time, the quarterback is not the person that is on the roster as the quarterback. He's now got a shift, just as in any other play, when you have any kind of motion, the assignments for each of the keys change. And here you have a situation that's very unusual where the key for the referee, who is just the quarterback, now you have somebody who is in a quarterback position. So he's now shifting to the running back as being his primary key. So when you look it over and unpack it in that way, yeah, there was a lot more in there that wasn't evident at first. And so I'm glad that we had the pool report, and they don't generally have anything more than very sparse information, but this one being very, very informative. We're going to move on to a situation that affected one of our crew members here, our senior editor, Mark Schultz, who is not on the podcast tonight because we need to talk about something that happened in one of his games. And it wound up getting viral, which is usually the bane of existence for officials. But in this case, it was what happened on the field, and he was incidental to the process. Basically, a huge brawl ensued, and it cleared all the benches, or at least particularly one bench had about five players on it. And in that case, Mark and his crew decided through subtraction who were the violators, and therefore automatically ejected.
Personal foul on a game. By rule, when flags are not supposed to fight, and automatically ejected if I'm off the bench sharing a player, they automatically ejected. Too many Urbana players come off the bench to fight and are ejected. There are not enough players on Urbana to play the game. The game is suspended and reported to the IHSA. No more professionalism.
And so now we have a situation where a game is tied, not ended, and it's completely up in the air. So, Mark doesn't want the spotlight on him, and he really can't talk about this particular play because it is under review. But, we all saw the video from the get-go when he posted it on Friday night to our Slack channel. And the first impression was wow.
Yeah, I think no official wants to have a brawl. I've been pretty fortunate. The only one I've had was actually in a Pop Warner game of all places. You know, on the amateur level, basically we're going to do everything we can to stop that from starting. But once it starts, we are taking numbers and assessing the relevant penalties. And in a lot of cases, if bench is clear, they're not going to have enough players to continue the game.
Yeah, most sports leagues now, to prevent all out brawls, have very strict requirements when it comes to stepping off of the bench onto the field to participate in any sort of confrontation. You know, I did have one where it was a couple that went out, but usually the coaches, whenever something dusts up, coaches are usually right there to try to keep people on the benches to prevent this from happening. And you can see even in Mark's video that the coaches were on the field. And usually, again, especially in high school, we give, you know, access to coaches to say, okay, you can go on the field to separate players. You will not be penalized if you are trying to prevent a fight from escalating. And typically that's what they do. But again, unfortunately, in Mark's case, and for Urbana's case, they all came off the bench, and ultimately that led to the suspension of that game. But we've seen that, you know, in the NBA, right, in playoffs, where there's altercations and 1 foot on the floor means a one game suspension for them. And that's going to be the interesting thing, too, for the IHSA, is to figure out, because typically, you know, players that are ejected lose another game. So is Urbana losing a second game out of this because their entire team is suspended? That's only something they can answer, because they have to balance, obviously, the student athletes with punishing the offender.
Another point of view that you could take from this is, because again, we weren't working this game. So once it gets resolved, if Mark is able to provide some more context, it'd be good. But think about, this was late in the second quarter, I believe, is when this took place. And you got to think about, you know, did this happen? Did something just happen all of a sudden? Or was there chippiness throughout the first quarter and into the second quarter that something may have brewed as the time went on? And again, I feel comfortable going through these hypotheticals because I don't really know what happened in this circumstance. So from an officiating crew perspective, if you're sensing chippiness early in the game, which, you know, we've all seen, you have these rivalry teams. I'm not sure. I don't know, Pat, if you can speak. For me, at Massachusetts, we're a small state. All the schools are generally nearby. So, Pat, I don't know if you can speak to this as an IHSA official yourself, if you know anything about these teams or this area, but these teams were separated by over an hour drive. So I'm not sure if these were really hardcore rivals. So if the chippiness had been going on throughout the game leading up to this brawl, as an officiating crew, you know, we want to make sure we stay on top of that. I just had a game this past Friday that had some chippiness early. Luckily did not lead to anything like this, but when you sense that, whether you're expecting it or not going into the game, that's something where you can kind of say, all right, we're going to come in a little harder at the end of every dead ball. We're going to make our presence known. Not suggesting that Mark's crew didn't do this, just taking a look at it from a perspective of how can we prevent something like this from happening in the first place. If we get chippiness going early on, can we get a lid on it before the pot explodes, so to speak? But if this truly happened as a one-off, if something maybe happened at the bottom of a pile that led to something like this, those are things you can never predict. But I want to say his crew, from the videos that we saw, his crew handled it well. They backed up at one point and started taking down numbers. And from there, any film of the game can pick out anyone that they didn't get. But you know, I loved his little announcement. I know he had told us he was mic'd up before we saw the footage, and one of the local reporters actually recorded part of his announcement. And you know, I loved the thing at the end. He added at the end, "No more football tonight." So that'll stick with me. I like that.
I think that's the giving him the business of high school, maybe, going forward, the announcement that, no more football tonight. But, and the one thing that I took away from that, and again, we saw most of the brawl and not what led up to the video that was supplied. But you have Mark and his crew, and, you know, you see everybody without hats. So right off the bat, you know that, like, something went down. And I have to commend him really being cool under pressure there, because, you know, that's a situation where you flip on that mic, it is very easy to get into a real angry state and start saying, and You have to remember that you're not the person, you know, the individual. You are the conveyor of information, and to do so in a way that is neutral and not, you know, not showing that you are, you know, either losing control or exasperated or anything like that. Ran down the numbers that he ticketed on one team. On the other team, they just ran out of the ability to do that and just say that there were too many players, you know, but it was of a number that they could not field a team anymore. And then, yes, to add that, there's no more football tonight, to just really punctuate it, because there's a lot of that. This is being reported and all that. You know, what is a suspended game? What are we doing? And then no more football tonight. That really set it down for the audience there, for the crowd. And I, you know, that is something that, with all of that chaos, to come out and be very organized and very deliberate in thought and in conveying that information, I do have to take my hat off to Mark and his work. He's in his second year as a white hat. He moved over from umpire because that was a little bit literally tough on his knees. After a few injuries, he went to a safer location. So second season with the white hat, and boy, he had a real challenge. And we'll end off with a play that we saw on Sunday, and we'll kind of broaden this out, not specifically on the play, but we had the Patriots with a 61-yard touchdown pass. There was a flag for offensive pass interference. Now, it was always listed as a late flag by the announcers. I think it was too close to the sideline, and it wasn't seen by the announcers. But yeah, that's a whole nother thing about late flag as being an erroneous statement. What wound up happening, though, what was erroneous was not offensive pass interference. And we went through this in our live blog in detail. So that touchdown came back, and now we're going to have an official that's going to be watching the tape this week and knows that, you know, that was their mess up there. They let that touchdown come back, and it should not have. And I'm sure that weighs on the field, that's, you've affected the game. So I want to just throw it out to you, not to, you know, really rub in any situation that you ran into, but just, you know, take us through that process, that midweek process, where there was just something that got screwed up, and it took points off the board.
Now, again, something that comes up like this, and I'll start off by saying, you know, when it's call like this on a Sunday that happens in your neck of the woods, you tend to hear it more than other places in the country. So I think now that the Patriots are getting good again, people want to find ways to complain about things, because I feel like I haven't heard a lot of officiating complaints up here in the last few years. Maybe that's a consequence of improving a little bit more. But anyway, so on a something like this, if it's something that you pick up, you know, during the game that, oh, you know, I hope I really got that one right. I can't remember who said it, but there was an NFL Films. I think it was Mike Carey in an NFL Films interview. I think it was back around the time he had just done Super Bowl 42. He always says there's always a few plays a game where you think, oh man, I hope I got that one right. And if it's something maybe that happened during the game, of a realization that, oh, you know, I'm not sure if I got this one here, especially on such a big play. I can speak to that because I had a play similar a few weeks ago earlier in the season that actually was the opposite. It was something that awarded a touchdown when it shouldn't have. And if you realize it during the game that you may have made a mistake, you can't think about it because it's going to affect the entire game. I like to live by a Jerry Markbright quote where he says every play is its own universe. So you can't dwell on it. And you got to just move forward. Each play is its own game, and just take it play by play. Because thinking, oh, did I make that call correctly in the first quarter? When it's late in the game, your focus is not going to be there. Now, if this was something that isn't going to come up or be really recognized until you get off the field, and then, you know, you see it on film, it's something you have to build on and work from. And that's it's a test that really elevates a good official to a great official, to be able to be malleable and take this information from your film and apply it down the road. Again, based on the film that we saw, we don't know who made this call, so we're not singling out anybody in particular. But when you take a look at the replays, it really isn't there. So to be able to say, what did I see that made me throw this, and how can I avoid this circumstance from happening again? How can I prevent this from happening down the line? You know, learning from your mistakes is always something you need to make sure you're continuing to do as an official, because again, it's not going to be right 100% of the time. It's magnified when a touchdown comes off the board, but you know, it's something that you're going to have to live with. It's part of the job.
Yeah. Officials are their harshest critics, right? And to Cam's point, there are judgment calls that you can question on, but there's also administrative failures of the entire crew that, you know, I have been part of where we lost a down. And at the time, even if you're discussing it, right, we're going over it with our heads. You know, there's seven of us. It's like, again, everyone out there is going, how the hell can't you count to four? Yes, I understand that. But a lot is going on in the game. And the rest of that game, you are thinking, oh, my God, did we lose a down somewhere? And the funny thing is, when it happened, we didn't hear boo from either coaching staff. We were not clued into that we thought we did something wrong, other than the fact that the down box moved when it shouldn't have moved. And we started second guessing ourselves, because like, okay, the scoreboard says four, the down box says four, we all have three. Well, what the heck is going on here? And then you really start second guessing yourself, and you don't know until you go look at the tape and on huddle, you progress through one, two, and three, and it goes one, three, four, or something like that, right? And that's the one where you really have to start looking at yourself and your crew and go, okay, we need to put administrative things in here to make sure this never happens again. Cause that really can never happen again, regardless of the down box runner, you know, or anything like that. So those are the ones that'll keep you up at night. And people don't need to tell you that you screwed up, because you know in your heart you did. And unfortunately that happens to all of us at some
point. Yeah, kind of in the same vein. I mean, obviously we all make mistakes, and sometimes the best way we never mess up a rule again is to mess up the rule the first time. And definitely have been there. Fortunately, nothing that really cost anything other than our crew being really upset with ourselves for a week. But yeah, we'll never, you get a rule wrong and you'll never get that one wrong again.
And I can even attest to the fact that, you know, having not been on the field, I can remember a situation a few years ago where I just really botched a rule interpretation and, you know, posted it out there, and there it was. And, you know, I got called out on it and had to pull it back. And then, you know, middle of the week, I messaging with Mark, and I'm like, damn, I really knew better. I should not have jumped to that conclusion there. I should have had the right interpretation. You know, we really pride ourselves on being right and being a trusted source for information. And this was just totally blown. And he said, yeah, you got to get up on your horse. You got to dust yourself off. And, you know, just like a good umpire to a referee, he was there to kind of just like, you know, let's jolt you out of this, and you got to get on to the next week and put it behind you. You made the correction. You know, everybody heard you. Yeah, you did get hit a little bit on that. But, you know, we'll see another day. And the overall sense that I'm getting from your experiences is, you know, yeah, dwelling on it, you know, that then that's occupying a space in your head there, you know. You know, not paying rent there, and you got that space occupied for that play that cannot be changed. And then that means that the next play that gets messed up is going to be scheduled almost immediately because you're out of focus. And yeah, it's just repeating your checklists. When you get to periods like, you know, well, in the NFL, they have the 2-minute warning or something like that. And you go through, oh, okay, here are our timing rules now. And here's all of everything that's changed. Even though that's something that's been drilled in, you go through it. When you have a fourth down and you do the fourth down signal where it's, you know, it's like an illegal procedure signal. But the officials do that to signal to each other that the fourth down fumble rules are in effect. And you don't just do it just to do it and you know, say that, okay, we did it on fourth down. That's your trigger to put that thing in your brain to keep an eye on that fourth down fumble. And with that, we wrap up another edition of the First and 25 podcast. Thanks to Pat, Cam, and Chris. You can catch us on your favorite podcasting app.